This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Immigration and the low-T GOP, the Supreme Court, Sean Spicer. I don't even know how we're going to fit it all in tonight on I'm Right. All right. So this is going to be an immigration talk. It's going to be about the low-T GOP. It's going to be about all these things. But before I get into specifically immigration, I just want to say there's talk on the right, and there has been for a long time, and on the left, about how we're going to be in a civil war one day. God forbid, right? There's nothing worse. Don't ever root for that, by the way. Nothing worse than a civil war. Read a history book. It's always awful. But there's always talk about it. Hey, I could see we're going to be in a civil war. We're a civil war is coming. We need a civil war. You'll even hear people talk like that. And again, I just want to emphasize, don't ever root for that. But in some ways, maybe we already are. And a great, great, great thing I can use to point that out is the current arguments over illegal immigrants and illegal immigration. We shift the Overton window in our society to such a point where we don't even realize how insane it is that we're having an argument about something. Entering a country illegally is bad. If you have entered the country illegally, or your visa expires and then you become illegal, you should be deported from the country. Now, I want you to think about what I just said. Is that partisan? You could take just those two or three sentences, however many it were, and take those sentences back to any country throughout history and say that to them. Before there was ever a Republican Party, before it was a Democratic Party, or before there was America, before anything. Don't come in illegally. If you find someone here illegally, deport them. And every country in the history of the world would say, well, yeah, obviously, that's the whole point of a border. That's the whole point of having an illegal immigration system of some kind, because that's an obvious point. You don't want people to come illegally. If you find them, you should deport them. Again, not even partisan, shouldn't be anyway. It's a basic truth. But wrap your mind around this. I just can't believe where we are. We have two major political parties in the United States of America. We'll get to the useless GOP in a moment. But one of the two major political parties in the country is committed to bringing in as many foreigners as they possibly can, so committed they'll send United States planes to foreign lands and fill the planes up with foreigners and fly them into the country. They then will take your money and hand it out to NGOs, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, hand it out to NGOs to ensure these foreigners are spread all throughout the United States of America. They used your money to create an app, so foreigners could schedule their invasion into the country. That was 4 years under Joe Biden. Now we have tens of millions of them here. And that brings me to the second part of the basic foreign policy, illegal immigration policy, I guess I should say, discussion we're having. Now we have to get them out. But every single area in this country that is controlled by Democrats has dedicated themselves to keeping them all here. Before I even play Zohran Mamdani and the rest of them, just pause for a moment and think about that. We're already in some kind of a civil war. I hate it. I hope it stops here. I hope they back off. I hope we can save the country, but we're not a unified country of 50 states anymore. We're not 50 United States anymore. There are hostile communist city-states inside the borders of our country who have declared in every way war on this country, and I don't know how we get out of this. This is the incoming mayor of our biggest, most important city.
As mayor, I'll protect the rights of every single New Yorker, and that includes the more than 3 million immigrants who call this city their home. But we can all stand up to ICE if you know your rights. If you encounter ICE, these are the things that every New Yorker should know. First, ICE cannot enter into private spaces like your home, school, or a private area of your workplace without a judicial warrant signed by a judge. That looks like this. If ICE does not have a judicial warrant signed by a judge, you have the right to say, I do not consent to entry, and the right to keep your door closed. Sometimes ICE will show you paperwork that looks like this and tell you that they have the right to arrest you. That is false. ICE is legally allowed to lie to you, but you have the right to remain silent. If you're being detained, you may always ask, am I free to go, repeatedly, until they answer you. You are legally allowed to film ICE, as long as you do not interfere with an arrest. It is important to remain calm during any interaction with ICE or law enforcement. Do not impede their investigation, resist arrest, or run. One last thing. New Yorkers have a constitutional right to protest. And when I'm mayor, we will protect that right. New York will always welcome immigrants. And I will fight each and every day to protect, support, and celebrate our immigrant brothers and sisters.
Your disdain, or my disdain for that man aside, that man is about to be the mayor of the biggest city, the most important city in the United States of America. This isn't some communist professor from Berkeley. How do we handle this? We had this lady. She's a state rep from Maine. Keep in mind, the foreigners we're bringing in, this part may be even worse than the other part we just talked about. It's not as if all of them are saying, I love America, I want to be an American, I want to chase the American dream, I want freedom, I've learned all about the country. Not when they're leaving their dumps, not when they get here. And then these foreigners will get here and they'll find a way to get elected from whatever district they happen to be in. And even once they've gotten here and gotten elected in the United States of America, they will still do nothing but crap on the United States of America. This woman's from Somalia.
So coming into the States, everything from the snow to, you know, the housing, the homes that we were all of a sudden occupying, everything was a shock, honestly. Every day was something new, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is just getting worse. Yeah, so.
So what state did you guys learn, first of all?
Kansas.
Kansas City.
Of all places, yeah. It was like a boot camp for Maine, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's just like, right, like, I mean, anyone who lives in Maine knows Maine and has ever visited Kansas, they will know what I'm talking about. It's just a lot
interesting
to deal with as a person of color, honestly,
yes,
or a black person.
You ungrateful witch. You're from Somalia? And you're insulting Kansas? Did they strap you down when you got to Kansas and perform female genital mutilation on you? I would venture to guess the answer is no, but they do it at a rate of over 90% in that godforsaken hellhole you come from, you witch. But these are the people we bring here. We bring them here, and we just allow them to talk like this in public, and Democrats will bring them here, and then they'll elect them, and then they'll fight tooth and nail to make sure they stay here. And then they'll stand in front of the camera. This is Jay Appel. They will stand in front of the camera. And I don't just want to single her out. This is a common theme in the Democrat Party. They will look at the American public in the eye. They'll say it to the television set. And they'll tell you that you're not important in this country. This country was built by foreigners.
The majority of Americans across the country regardless of political party, know that immigrants from all over the world, Somalia, India, wherever they're from, Latin America, Africa, that immigrants have built this country and make this country what it is today.
I know we said the same thing as I opened up the show, but I just want you to take a brief moment before we move on and think about what she just said right there. And think about how far we've moved the Overton window in this country, that any politician from any party would get up in front of the American people, in front of the citizens, and tell all of them to their faces, you didn't build this. It was the immigrants who built all this. How bonkers are we in this country? And that, of course, brings us to the party that is supposed to oppose this stuff. They're supposed to be anti-communists in the Republican Party. They're supposed to fight tooth and nail against these savages who are destroying us. And maybe you're saying, well, Jesse, we have states like Maine. We're going to have Susan Collins from Maine. Jesse, she can't be some hardcore right-winger like us. She'd never get elected. And you are correct. I don't think you've ever heard me insult Susan Collins on this show. Susan Collins is what she is. It's not the Susan Collinses of the world who are keeping the low-T GOP low-T. It's blood-red states who send the most disgusting eunuchs to Washington, D.C., who constantly kneecap our efforts, constantly give aid and comfort to the enemy, and exhibit A for this. I could point out my state, Texas. I could point out Oklahoma. I could point out the Dakotas. I could go all the way through the South, because every red state seems to be guilty of this. But honestly, maybe the worst state in the United States of America for sending eunuchs to Washington, D.C. is the state of Utah. Utah is blood red. Utah could elect somebody to the right of you, to the right of me, if the low-T GOP primary voter would get off his butt and get involved and vote in primaries. Instead, we get John Curtis.
So listen, I've learned, sadly, I can't control anybody but me, right? And the best thing I can do is set my example. And I think all of us need to wake up every morning, look in the mirror and say, what are we doing? What am I doing specifically today to make this country a better country, to make all of our immigrants feel more welcome? That's what we've always had.
We should all be deeply ashamed. Me too. In Texas, we have John Cornyn. Deeply ashamed that we are this apathetic, that we send these dorks to Washington, D.C. It angers me to no end. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have, in my opinion, the biggest case that has ever come before the Supreme Court. This is the case about birthright citizenship, because these people, once they get dropped off in our country, they start having 85 kids. They're all U.S. citizens. They'll all vote Democrat their whole life. They'll all hate the place. They'll all be on welfare, and it has to stop. We're going to ask Bill Jacobson whether that's going to be overturned, Lord willing. Before we talk to Bill, I need some chips to make me feel better. I love chips. Saturday night, watch the football game with the fam. I do the same thing that you do when you watch sporting events. I snack. I'm a snacker. And that's always been chips. Let me get some Cheetos. Let's get some Doritos. That stuff's terrible for you. When you get older, it starts to show up in your blood work too. So what do you do? I can't just give up chips. I won't give up chips. I don't have to give up chips. I found a better option. I found Massa chips. They're delicious. Multiple flavors. They have stuff with a little spice. I prefer stuff with a little heat. They have blue chips. They have whatever. Three ingredients. No seed oil, garbage, nothing. Three ingredients, corn, salt, tallow. You can eat them guilt-free. You want a big discount? Go get a few bags, find the flavor you love, and eat chips guilt-free at massachips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, I'm not saying Bill is going to agree with me, and he definitely knows a lot more about this stuff than I do, but in my opinion, the birthright citizenship question is the most important decision the Supreme Court will ever make in its entire history. It is that important. People do not understand just how much this system has been abused, and I'm scared to death because I have no idea how they're going to rule. Joining me now, the great Bill Jacobson, Cornell Law University professor, and of course, founder of Legal Insurrection. All right, Bill, you can agree or disagree. You can call me an idiot, but I want to know how they're going to rule. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, I wish I'd like to know that, too. I think it'll be very interesting when we get the oral arguments there. But I think people in the mainstream media have not taken this case very seriously because they've been accustomed to birthright citizenship all of their natural lives. But it wasn't always that way. And so I think they're going to be very surprised that there are very serious legitimate arguments against it. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I think you are absolutely right. This will be an earthquake changing the nation if they strike down the common concept of birthright citizenship, really in many ways larger than the abortion decision. It may not receive the violent reaction that the abortion decision received, but it is essentially building the wall, but not restricted to the southern border. It will cut off the anchor baby problem. It will cut off the birthright citizenship tourism problem. It will really change the nation, the way the nation looks at who is an American citizen. No more will your mere presence here, illegally or temporarily, be enough to become a citizen. And that changes the whole equation on immigration and migration and all of the problems that we have. In many ways, it will be more effective than passing a more stringent immigration law because it removes the incentive. If you come here illegally or temporarily, there is no citizenship at the end of the rainbow. And that's just going to be enormous.
Bill, I hate to ask a question like this because it's going to be open-ended and I'm just going to have to hand you the floor, but I can't wrap my mind around it and I want you to explain it to me. Everyone knows what the 14th Amendment was about. Everybody knows that, unless you're a complete moron. Everyone knows this was about slaves who had every right to become full citizens, and it's all documented. It's not, I can read it. It's documented. That's what the 14th Amendment was about. How in the name of God did we get to the place where it meant you can jump across the border from Mexico and have a kid in an emergency room and he's an American citizen and that this is even up for debate in the courts? How did we even get here?
Well, I think it's like a lot of things. It's a narrative gets set. A narrative gets set in the media. A narrative gets set politically. It obviously has been in the great interest of the Democrat Party to have this current arrangement. So it's, you know, like the boiling frog. It happens slowly, and then you wake up and you realize we have people running across the border. We have people coming into California from Asia on express, tourism flights for the purpose of giving birth, only to then return home with your U.S. citizen child. And we have all of these things that have grown up as a cultural issue. How did so much go wrong in our society? It happened slowly. It wasn't one thing. But one thing can change it. If the Supreme Court rules that birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment does not refer to people in the country illegally or temporarily, that puts an end to it in many ways. It doesn't put an end to the cultural fight and the political fight, but it puts an end to the legal fight. And that the Supreme Court has never ruled on this. You frequently hear, well, it's been undisputed law for many decades. And then they'll cite a Supreme Court case from the 1800s, which involved not somebody temporarily in the country, it was a permanent resident of the country. And so it just developed that way. And there's no real explanation for it other than a political and cultural narrative was set. And nobody wanted a bucket because you know the names you get called if you are against that. And so that's really how it developed. But this could be absolutely massive. I don't know which way it's going to turn out, but if they do rule that birthright citizenship under the 14th Amendment was never intended to apply to people who are here illegally or temporarily. That is just huge.
Bill, let's shift gears, although it's along the same lines. The Trump administration keeps firing immigration judges. And for those who kind of don't know the background of it, we don't have enough immigration judges. There's just not enough time to get all these people processed through. So it would seem counterintuitive to fire these judges. The Supreme Court's going to have to step in. What's happening with all this?
Well, you know, the immigration system, people don't realize it's like a entire judicial system that we never really hear a lot about. And I think the feeling in the Trump administration is that a lot of the immigration judges, particularly ones appointed under Democrat presidents, are slow walking things, are not ruling the way Trump administration thinks they should be ruled, and that the answer is to replace them. And so that's really what's going on. I don't think that on that issue, the Supreme Court's going to get involved. There are other issues about replacing heads of agencies, and there was an argument today regarding the Federal Trade Commission head who was removed. But I don't think the immigration judicial system is going to get to the Supreme Court, although the Trump administration attempt to gain control of so-called independent agencies like the Federal Trade Commission, I think is very much what's happening. The issue before the Supreme Court on immigration judges is a slightly different issue. It's whether the restrictions put on them are subject to suit in federal court as opposed to administrative claims. There's a lot of different issues floating around, and a lot of people are getting confused over them. But the replacement of immigration judges is not before the Supreme Court. The replacement of agency heads is before the Supreme Court.
How do we feel like they're leaning on that after all that testimony today? It's another one of those things that's just bonkers when you think about it, that it's even up for debate whether or not the president can decide who's the head of someone in his executive branch. But how do you think they're going to roll on this?
Well, I think I listened to almost the entire argument, not 100% of it, but 95% of it. So I think I have a good feel for it. And the prevailing wisdom in the mainstream media is one of doom and gloom from their perspective, which is people think that the justices are going to side with Trump on this, that to the extent you have an agency, and there's really no such thing as an independent agency, but an agency which has some level of independence, like the Federal Trade Commission, that the president still gets to decide who runs the agency because they are performing executive branch duties. They are performing duties that need to have accountability through the presidency, because otherwise you have these agencies which are not subject to any political process. Now, some people like that. Our favorite justice, and I say that somewhat jokingly, Ketanji Brown Jackson, was arguing policy today. Well, you know, don't we need experts in these agencies? You know, how are they going to have their expertise if it's up to the whim of the president? Well, you know what? Because it's an executive agency, it's a part of the executive branch. And we elect a president, and we elect a president knowing what they're going to do on these sort of issues. So it's really baffling how you get to a situation where you have an executive branch agency which is not subject to the executive, to the chief executive, to the president of the United States. And that's, I think they're going to lose on that. I think Trump's going to win on that. That's the prevailing takedown from today's oral argument.
Finally, the redistricting maps. Of course, Texas is in the news for this. California's in the news for this. Indiana's in the news for this. And the Supreme Court is stepping in. What's happening?
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court issued a stay, so it's not a permanent decision on the merits, although it's pretty clear how the majority of justices view it, because when you get a stay, one of the factors is likelihood of succeeding on the merits. And they found that the government was likely to succeed on the merits, that the Texas map was fine because it was drawn for partisan purposes, which is okay, not for racial purposes, which is not okay. And so that is an issue that I think Trump's prevailed, at least through the 2026 election, and I believe will prevail ultimately. It's probably the reason, although it's a little different because in California it was a referendum. But I think the Supreme Court's attitude on this redistricting is going to be, you guys fight it out. It's a political issue. But as long as you're not doing it based on race and you're doing it just because you want more Republicans or in California, more Democrats, we're not going to get involved. And so that's what it's about. It will be interesting to see how it shakes out because Texas is pretty much offset by California, but there are several other red states. So net, net, Republicans are going to come out ahead on this whole redistricting fight, and I don't see the Supreme Court getting involved.
Bill, thank you, brother. As always, I appreciate it. Let's talk about Democrats a little bit more in a moment. Before we do that, let me talk to you about your mobile company. AT&T got themselves in hot water. In fact, Verizon got themselves in hot water. Verizon's working with the FBI to hand over your phone records. AT&T just got busted forcing people into training about whiteness and things like that. Are you funding these companies? Are you funding communism? I'm not. I switched to Pure Talk. I used to. I've had Verizon. I've had AT&T. I've had T-Mobile. I'm not judging, but why would you fund those companies when we have Pure Talk now? Pure Talk, I'm not asking you to sacrifice anything at all. They're on the same network, same towers, same coverage, only you're funding a company that is veteran-led, Vietnam veteran. They hire American citizens based right here in America. You keep your phone, you keep your number. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. All right. Let's talk for a moment, because it's a Christmas season. I thought it would be helpful to have a conversation. It's going to sound really mean. All right, it's going to sound mean. And I look, sometimes I can be mean. I know that. I understand I'm a jerk. But this is actually not supposed to be mean sounding. And I'm not supposed to bring you down. This is supposed to help get you through the Christmas season we're going into. Okay? So because it's the Christmas season, inevitably, you are going to find yourself at a gathering with a Democrat. Maybe this is that Christmas party your office is holding. They'll probably call it a holiday party because this country has lost its mind. But the Christmas party they're having at your office that nobody wants to go to, it's going to be a Democrat there. Maybe, I hope not, but you never know. Maybe you're gathering with family and there's going to be a Democrat there. Maybe it's your liberal Aunt Peggy, mother-in-law, brother, whatever the case may be. Okay, so I got that. You got that? I got that. We're in the season of having to spend time with Democrats. So let me explain something that I think will probably help save you some frustration. That person is mentally ill. And I know how that sounds. Like I'm just being a jerk and throwing bombs at them. I'm not saying that at all. I'm really genuinely not. For example, there's a story out in the Washington Post. Rosie O'Donnell. You know, she used to be kind of this funny actress. Then she just kind of lost her mind with Trump derangement syndrome. Well, she goes to see a therapist, surprise, surprise, and her therapist told her, you need to stop talking about Trump. Like, it's messing up your mind. You need to stop. Take 2 days off. And Rosie O'Donnell admitted she couldn't last 2 hours before she went back to talking about Trump. 2 hours. Now, why? Well, is it because she's dumb? That's a big part of it. Is it because she's on anti-anxiety medication? Almost undoubtedly, right? All this stuff applies to the Democrat in your life. But it's more than just that. So we have a really dumb person sitting there popping anti-anxiety pills, and then it's the propaganda they consume every day that you ignore, or if you see it, you roll your eyes at it. They don't. That's the point I'm trying to get through. How could you be that deranged? Why is your liberal Aunt Peggy going to blow up Christmas Eve screaming about Trump and bragging about abortion? But what's wrong with her? Why do her eyes look like that? Because she sits down all day, every day, and she watches stuff like this.
I mean, look, the President of the United States and his Secretary of Defense are conducting murder on the high seas. They're committing murder, and Americans should care. Like, look, none of us like drug traffickers, but we have laws that say that drug traffickers don't get summarily executed. And if it's happening off the coast of America with people that we don't know, just give it time before Donald Trump starts doing this same kind of thing to people we do know right here at home. It matters if the president of the United States breaks the law.
That's bonkers, I know. I know everything you're screaming right now. I'm screaming the same thing. I know you're rolling your eyes. That's ridiculous. That I saw another Democrat went on the news and said, I think it might have been Angus King, and said, how long before he starts executing drug dealers on the streets of San Francisco? Ridiculous, yeah. A blatant lie, yeah. All that stuff is true. Your liberal Aunt Peggy believes it. She's an insane person. Now, that means you should adjust how you deal with the insane person. If you think you're dealing with another logical human being and you're going to be able to walk through these issues and kind of logically talk it out, you're going to be so frustrated and angry, and you're going to get in arguments. If you just accept that she's mentally ill. When you look at that liberal Aunt Peggy at your company party, I want you to picture that that person just escaped from an insane asylum. Now, would you engage with that person in conversation, or do you just kind of keep your distance? Just trying to save Christmas for you, all right? All right. We'll see if Sean Spicer is going to save Christmas for us. Before we get to Sean, I want to talk about how you feel every day. Are you full of energy every day? Full of pep? When you get home at night, when it's time to make dinner, hang with the kids, but are you fired up and ready to go? Or are you staring at the clock at 3:30 in the afternoon, dying to plop into the couch? You need to get on some natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I discovered them during all the COVID insanity in this country. And I love Chalk because it keeps me full of energy all the time, naturally. Not with my eighth cup of coffee, not that at all, not with needles in my arm. Natural herbal supplements every day has changed my life for the better in every way. I'm better at work, I'm better at home. Go experience it. You will thank me for it. You're 60, 90 days away from being a different human being. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Senator, have you seen the video?
I have seen the video, and it is deeply disturbing. I am mostly concerned with the fact that we are putting our American servicemen and women in jeopardy here. We're putting them in jeopardy in case they ever get shot down. We're putting them in legal jeopardy. They could be brought up in international criminal courts. And so what we're doing here is taking those professionals, or utmost professionals, and putting them into harm's way. And that's what bothers me the most about what Pete Hegseth is doing. He is the least qualified Secretary of Defense in our nation's history, and he's very cavalier about doing things. Fact of the matter is, only Congress can decide that we can go to war, and there was no such declaration made.
I just want to make sure that that I get this accurate. You have seen the classified video of this particular strike, the first strike, and then the double tap, as it's known.
No, I've just seen what's been available in the media. Okay. I've read the full report, but I've not seen the actual video.
Well, no, not that one. Joining me now, my friend Sean Spicer of the wonderful Sean Spicer Show. Sean, people who are observant can't help but notice. They all say the same talking points. CNN says the same thing as Senator Idiot, who says the same thing as Senator Jerkwater, who says the same thing as New York Times, who says the same thing as this. Is there an email that goes out, Sean? What? Tell us how the propaganda works. You know all this stuff.
You're asking someone on the wrong side. I don't get the emails. I ask the same questions you do. I have Tim Parlatore on my show tonight, who is a Navy JAG and has, on the civilian side, served both Secretary Hegseth and President Trump in criminal cases. And I asked him a very similar, I'm like, how do these guys get the talking point? Because it all went from like a war crime to breaking the law to now it's, I mean, they literally all use the same one. The kicker, though, Jesse, and I was like, I don't know if Dana Bash at CNN there was trying to throw Senator Duckworth like a lifeline, but she's like, wink, nod. You definitely saw that video because it's classified and you wouldn't have seen it. So I'm just going to make sure I help you. It's not just the talking points. It's the assists. Like, who gets that? Who gets the, like, hey, I'm going to, this was like the old, you know, thing with Regis. Do you want to phone a friend? Because I don't think that you actually saw the video that you just lied about seeing that, you know, made up that talking. The whole thing is hysterical as far as I'm concerned.
Sean, this is clearly an op being run against Pete Hegseth. You know, at best, they get to take out Pete Hegseth. At worst, they cause some division inside the Trump administration. People get annoyed having to answer questions about it. But there's a lot of different parts of the Trump administration that communists hate. Why Pete Hegseth? What makes him a target right now? They think he's, what, easy to take out? Is he uniquely threatening this one? What is it?
So I'm going to tell you something that I have found over the last 10 years. One of the things that people misunderstand about Trump and these people who serve Trump is that they like to use a word that they say, oh, they're very loyal. And it's not that they're loyal. A dog is loyal, Jesse. I mean, like, you can sit under a desk and just, you know, be present all day, and that's loyalty. What these folks are disruptors. And what I think that they particularly hate about Pete Hegseth is, considering the size of the budget and the amount of policy that he controls, Pete Hegseth wasn't a go-along, get-along kind of guy. He got rid of the DEI woke mentality. He's firing people all throughout the Department of War that don't adhere to the, you know, liberal woke agenda. So he's disrupting the apple cart. And what their view is that then you need to be taken out, right? It's not that he just supports Trump. It's that he's actually getting the job done. So then they go in and accuse him of war crimes. Look, that you talk about running an op. Let's go back for 1 second. That Washington Post story that kicked this whole thing off says that Hegseth walked into a room and yelled, go kill the guy, right? Now, I don't know about you, but I've been doing this long enough that the first thing that went through my mind is that's not how it works. There's no way that happened, okay? And sure enough, a week later, now there's video. Now there's, you know, people within who have been in the room who say that never happened. And no one is held accountable at the Washington Post or whatever that says, that's not, you know, oops, our bad. Like, we lied, we spread misinformation. This truly is an op being run against him because he's a disruptor.
You know, the budget actually is probably the simplest explanation. You look at a budget of the United States of America and you see that military budget. How many people in D.C. are driving around in BMWs and living in brownstones because of the military budget that flows to them?
Think about all these contractors, okay, who have had to create training programs on DEI and wokeness and how to, you know, better yourself through training your, you know, getting in touch with your inner racism. And all of these massive contractors, and just to your point, like, they're making lots and lots of money. And the second that he says no more, no mas, the gravy train stops, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of shareholders that get pissed off.
Sean, I want to ask you about the rumor mill. Obviously, as we know, they lie about everything all the time. As we just discussed, they'll lie about something. But the rumors are that Trump is displeased with this person or displeased with that person. And I have to assume most of these things are lies. But I also know he's Donald Trump, and any executive is going to be displeased with certain things after a year. Do you think there's somebody in this administration who actually is on the hot seat? And if so, why?
I think it's possible. But look, to your point, there's sort of a continuum. There's people that Donald Trump really is upset with, doesn't think they're doing their job, should be fired. And then there are people on the other end of the continuum who are trying to create that narrative. So they'll start spreading rumors. And I think there's one thing not to be in the good graces of some staffers or some, you know, in the administration. And that's a big difference. I've always said, you know, at the end of the day, for my tenure, all I cared about was, you know, if the president was pleased with the job that I was doing serving him and the American people, that's it. But you find, and so far in this first 10 months of the Trump administration, we've seen a lot less of it, where you have a lot less of the palace intrigue. But to be honest with you, Jesse, you never know. He is an inquisitive guy by nature. So I'll pick up the phone, I'll call him, and he goes, Sean, how's Scott Bessent doing? What do you think of the job he's doing? How's Howard Lutnick? He asks people all the time. And for a lot of people, they're like, oh, well, that means something's got to be wrong. In Trump's world, he's constantly evaluating his policies. How's this playing? What's going on in the media? How's so-and-so doing? That's him. He's always been inquisitive like that. But there are people that try to use that as an opportunity to put make someone up or down.
Okay, so Kristi Noem.
Yeah.
How does he think she's doing? And I asked about this specifically, not necessarily because of the story that came out recently, but because there have been shakeups at ICE already. I know they've brought Border Patrol guys who are more hawkish into leadership positions of ICE because Trump, to his credit, was displeased with the pace of things. Do you get the feeling that Kristi Noem may be feeling some heat?
It's a great question. I mean, I read a lot of the same stories that you do. I ask the same questions. Mm-hmm. I do think that there is something there. And the reason I say that is that one of the things that I've realized in Trump world is that the narrative, when it's out there for a while, either he will quash it and say, are you kidding me? I love the job that Jesse's doing and I want to keep, he's doing fantastic. Or it will fester. And at some point, if he's not quashing it, then I do wonder. And so this current narrative that's out there, I have not seen anything from the White House to quash it, which would normally be the case if there was nothing to it.
All right, let's shift gears and talk about Democrats. Axios has a piece out today on Josh Shapiro, basically baby powdering his butt for a 2028 run. Now, from the outside looking in, I'm not a Democrat, neither are you. I say John Shapiro doesn't have a chance because he's a Jew. I mean, he's popular governor in Pennsylvania, but the way the Democrat Party's gone, that's pretty much a disqualifier at this point, right? Or am I wrong?
No, it's funny for, you know, Michelle Obama was out over the weekend saying, we're not ready to elect a woman. And then you have this Josh Shapiro issue where they're not ready to elect someone who's Jewish. They're the ones who have problems with all of these, you know, gender and someone's religion. But currently, if you look at what's going on in the Democratic Party, the sort of pro-Hamas wing of the Democratic Party is going to be very active in a primary. And a guy like Shapiro would have a very, very challenging time. I think there's a lot of reasons why he doesn't get through a Democratic primary, but that's definitely a high on the list.
Sean, midterms. I think it's fairly conventional wisdom that the party in power loses seats in the midterms. You and I have talked about this a million times. It just happens. Happens to Democrats. Happens to us. I'm assuming we're going to lose some seats. Now, there's losing seats, and then there's a bloodbath, and you're wiped out, and Donald Trump gets impeached every other day. What do you think we're looking at?
So here's what I would tell you. I was at the NRCC. I ran a division called incumbent retention in the 2000 cycle. We're one of the only times in American history where we actually picked up seats with party in power. The difference was the economy was strong. Our members were prepared. They raised the appropriate number of money, and we minimized retirements. There is a bit of a problem right now on our side in terms of how many people are retiring. If the economy isn't in good shape next July, I think we're going to have a big problem. But Donald Trump's making in tons of investment, bringing companies here. I got to believe that that money starts getting through the pipeline by, you know, springtime next year, creating jobs, economic growth. If the economy's in really good shape, Jesse, they'll pick seats up. If the economy's in the crapper, we're screwed.
Okay. Well, I guess fingers crossed on that. Sean, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it, man. Lighten the mood. Next. It's time to lighten the mood, and as you are well aware, I have a favorite thing about politics. You know, we talk about politics, we care about politics because it does matter. It does matter, but we all have little things we greatly enjoy. I'm a bad person. I'm a sick person. And part of this sickness is I enjoy watching my enemies suffer, especially when they're doing something terrible and suffering because of it. My favorite thing in politics by a mile, is Democrats pandering to black people. It's so funny for a variety of reasons. It's funny because of the ham-fisted way they go about it. It's so obvious. It's such obvious pandering. It's funny because it's so obviously dishonest. It's Hillary Clinton carrying hot sauce in her purse. It's Pete Buttigieg drinking a 40 with a couple black guys trying to increase his numbers in the black community. I'm not kidding. You can go look it up. That actually happened. Joe Biden razor fighting with Corn Pop. Gavin Newsom recently talked about eating Wonder Bread and shooting hoops while hustling when he was on an NBA podcast. It's just so freaking funny. It makes me laugh to no end. Jacob Frey is a tiny little Jewish guy who's trying to keep getting elected mayor of Minneapolis. Well, in order to get mayor of to be mayor of Minneapolis, you have to appeal to the Somali community. Now, Somalia sucks for a variety of reasons, but maybe the worst part about the country is the food, and that's when they actually have some. Well, he sat down for some Somali cuisine, and honestly, this is exactly what I used to look like when I was eating a plate of lima beans that my mother had set in front of me. I despise all vegetables, but lima beans, I used to do this exact thing you're looking at on the screen right now. I used to spread it around on the plate. I used to, one time I was about to vomit. It was just the worst thing in the world. And I did exactly that. And it makes me laugh. He hates that food. He pretends to like it. He's a filthy liar. And he's suffering as he panders. I love it. See you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.